Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. In prepping for Chapter 7 and getting ready to record today, of course, I'm doing my read through and a little bit of research and kind of getting everything ready. And it occurred to me that as I was looking up the definition of Kerok or the nature of oak and elm trees and those kinds of things, in order to fill in those details for all of you on today's episode, I realized that I've been creating something with the intent of sharing it for you, for the listeners out there, and for your enjoyment and your education. And yet, and maybe this isn't a surprise for anybody, I've been the recipient of that as much as any of you. I was thinking about it. The last time I went and read through these books, I didn't take the time to answer the questions that popped in my head as I read through the books. I was familiar with the works, and I was familiar with the history of the world and the world building, the mythology, all of these mysterious and ancient creatures and beings and individuals and all of that stuff. And yet, I still come across things when reading this like, you know what? I don't know that much about oaks and elms. That seems like something worth researching. Or the word Kerok. I always assumed that the word Kerok was an existing word that they just happen to use in the story. But no, it's not. It's a combination of old words that was made into basically a new word for The Hobbit. Because, of course it was. Because this is J.R.R. Tolkien. That's what he does. And yet, I wouldn't have taken the time to dig into these types of details if it wasn't for the fact that all of you were listening along to this show and giving me the opportunity to do so. So I just wanted to start out this episode and say thank you so much for that opportunity. And I mention it occasionally. I enjoy making this content. I enjoy doing this show, hopefully as much as all of you enjoy listening to it. But from that particular perspective, I don't think it really, really hit me until today that not only has it given me the opportunity to do this, but to also dig deeper into the things that I wasn't really sure of. So, thank you for that. All right, so let's get into Chapter 7, Queer Lodgings. So this picks up right after where they were in the previous chapter, of course. They're up in the eyrie of these giant eagles, and they are exhausted. They sleep the night. And Bilbo wakes up, we get this little phrase here, with the early sun in his eyes. And I'm picturing the scene. They are up in a mountain. They are way higher than I think any of them have probably ever been. And so they can see a vast distance into the horizon. So the early sun is the earliest possible sun from the location they are at, waking him up, which is kind of fun to think about. So he jumps up and then he's, of course, the Baggins part of him is coming back out because he's uncomfortable. He's up on this gigantic mountain. He doesn't have his comforts. He wants a wash and a brush. He doesn't have tea or toast or bacon for breakfast. And this also makes me think of something else. If you have ever been on a camping or hiking trip where you have survived in the wilderness for days or weeks at a time, then you might understand what it's like to not have bathed for a week, or to not have brushed your teeth because maybe you lost your toothbrush or forgot to pack it for the trip. And so you got to use your finger and maybe some toothpaste. But in this context, he doesn't have toothpaste even. There's nothing there. One of my best friends from college is the kind of guy who grew up being a scout, and he loves doing stuff in the wild and the wilderness. And right out of college, he spent some time working for the National Scouts, whatever troop thing it is. I don't remember the actual name or details, but he was way off in, I believe it was in Arizona. I could be wrong about the state, but he spent a significant period of time, months, taking individual campers out on hikes for a week at a time or more. These were teenagers, but older teenagers, and they would learn to survive in the wild and chart their course in order to get where they need to go and get back to where they were coming from, all of that kind of stuff. But the one detail that I remember the most is the fact that when they would return to camp completely dirty, not having bathed or done anything to take care of themselves in that regard, in over a week, the smell was supposed to be amazing, but not in a good way. And they wouldn't notice it of themselves so much as they'd notice it of the other groups that would return while they were back at the base camp. So I'm sure you can imagine what that must feel like, even if you haven't actually been in that situation. And that's what Bilbo is feeling in this moment. And that was a big, long aside, but I hope it makes the point. So they decide it's time to go. And this time they get to climb onto the back of the eagle between the wings, and there are 15 of them. So that means there is one for every party member. And this is significant because they are no longer being treated like prisoners, as it was mentioned in the previous chapter, and not prisoners to the eagles, but prisoners that were freed from the wolves and the goblins. But they are now treated more like friends, the way that you would let a friend climb on your back in order to go for a ride somewhere. I guess if you were, you know, sentient horse or something like that. In the case of this, of course, they're eagles. And we're also reminded here that Bilbo is still afraid of heights. He does not open his eyes. He closes his eyes. And at first, it might seem like it's due to the winds. You know, if you've ever been in a situation where the wind is blowing very strong in your face, you kind of want to close your eyes. They start to tear. You close your eyes to protect them. But no, it's not just because of that. It's because Bilbo is, again, afraid of heights. And we don't hear about this very often. And this whole section is a return to this place of calm. It is a calm between storms, you could say. They are safe. They're safe up in the Eyrie. They're able to eat, even though Bilbo's uncomfortable. They're able to travel and get down comfortably on the backs of the eagles this time. And yet, we still get a little bit of humor kind of dropped in here. "Don't pinch," said the eagle. "You need not be frightened like a rabbit, even if you look rather like one. It is a fair morning with little wind. What is finer than flying?" Because of course an eagle would think it's such a nice thing to be flying. But Bilbo doesn't think the same thing. He would have liked to say a warm bath and late breakfast on the lawn afterwards, but he thought it better to say nothing at all and to let go his clutch just a tiny bit. So he relaxes a little bit, doesn't pull as hard on the eagle. And we have another moment where Tolkien is doing this thing where he's showing us the similarities and yet differences between different groups of people in the way that they perceive the world, in the ways that they enjoy the world, and how all of those things are good, but yet in very different ways, and they don't always make sense to everybody else because Bilbo is not an eagle. So they travel for a while, and we're reminded again about the eagle's sight. They must have seen the point they were making for, and they do these great spirals going down further and further and further. And you can tell that Tolkien has spent some time watching birds and seeing the way the birds move. The only time great birds like this dive directly towards the ground or the water is when they're hunting. Otherwise, they spiral. And so it makes a lot of sense. This feels like a very real thing. And then we're given another detail here. Remember, Tolkien always likes to point out the kinds of plants. And as they get lower, they start to notice oaks and elms. And it's not the only time they mention oaks and elms in this section. And so that got me wondering, oaks and elms, why specifically oaks and elms? Well, it turns out that oaks and elms live in certain types of biomes that overlap. Now, of course, each of them can live in other areas that the others don't, but the places where they dwell together include these: moist habitats along rivers that are periodically flooded, forests that are very similar to areas like Central and Northern Europe, lowland regions below an altitude of 300 meters, and also some mountainous areas like in Southern Europe. So they're a very diverse two different species that overlap in many different types of biomes. And it would make sense. They're coming down from the mountains into an area that is much more low than it was before. And by noting oaks and elms, it means that this area is very similar to many people who have lived and traveled throughout Europe and what they would recognize as being two of the predominant types of trees in those kinds of locations. Now, all of that seems intuitive, but it wasn't something I was aware of until I did the research. So there you go, oaks and elms. But that's not the only thing that is in this area as they continue lower and lower and lower. They get to this cropping out of the ground, and it says, right in the path of the stream which looped itself about it was a great rock, almost a hill of stone, like a last outpost of a distant mountains, or a huge piece cast miles into the plain by some giant among giants. Now, we've learned that giants are real, and this may actually be how this rock got here, but it also could just be part of the mountain range that is much lower than the rest of the mountain range. Both things seem very, very possible. And this section also notes the stream that loops its way around it. So this may also be an area that can flood at times due to the stream that is running through it near the low-lying areas past the mountains. So again, oaks and elms would make sense at this location. So the eagles drop everybody off, and then we get this. "Farewell," they cried, "wherever you fare, till your eyries receive you at the journey's end." And we're told that this is a polite thing that the eagles often say, which makes sense because they are a type of people. They have customs and they have traditions and they have sayings that they use. And of course, Gandalf, being the kind of person he is aware of every culture and every saying and every custom. So he responds with exactly the right thing. He says, "May the wind under your wings bear you where the sun sails and the moon walks." And we're told directly in the text that he knows the correct reply. But notice here, I think this is interesting. So of course they're eagles and wind under your wings. All of that makes sense. And of course they're up in the sky so they can see the sun and the moon. But notice it says the sun sails and the moon walks. The sun sails and the moon walks. Remember, the sun and the moon were put into the sky and are piloted by Maiar. So in some ways, the sun sails and the moon also actually walks in a way. But I think there's kind of another analogy here. The sun moves faster across the sky than the moon does. So the speed of sailing as opposed to the speed of walking. So in both of those contexts, it kind of makes sense. Now remember, Tolkien likes to give away the plot sometimes, for as good as he is about building anticipation and curiosity and ratcheting up the tension, which he's about to do again, we also get these moments where he just kind of reveals the end of the story, almost as if he's so familiar with stories from history that he all the time just kind of knows the end of the story before he reads them. And so he's worked this into the text as well, which in some ways betrays the nature of this being a novel and wondering what's going to happen at the end. But I think there may be some wiggle room here because it does seem like he leaves a certain amount of, well, I don't know, a lack of detail in some ways as well. Here, let's just read the paragraph and let me know what you think about this. "And so they parted, and though the Lord of the Eagles became in after days the king of all birds and wore a golden crown, and his 15 chieftains golden collars made of the gold that the dwarves gave them." Wait a minute. The dwarves give them gold. They also wear crowns and collars. They're eagles. Seems kind of odd, right? Bilbo never saw them again, except high and far off in the Battle of Five Armies. Now, at this point, we don't know what a Battle of Five Armies is and why they would be there. But then the very next sentence says, "But as that comes in at the end of this tale, we will say no more about it just now." So we know that there is a Battle of Five Armies that will happen at the end of the story. Tolkien has already told this to us. We are like halfway through the book, and he's like, "Oh, by the way, the dwarves get their treasure back, and there's this big battle between five armies, but we won't talk about it yet." Right? Like, how strange is that? He just kind of gives away the ending, at least some aspects of the ending, and implies that the dwarves win, that they get their gold back. Seems like an odd decision from the perspective of a novelist, but from the perspective of a historian, it seems very natural to be able to fill in those details while the eagles are the topic right here, and then move on with the story, looking back on it as if you're somebody who already knows how the events play out historically. So it's kind of odd, but kind of makes sense at the same time. And then we get to details about the Kerak. We're told that it's a flat space on the top of the hill of stone, and a well-worn path with many steps leading down to the river. So already, it's being implied that this is a location that has regularly had visitors. Either somebody visits this regularly or has lived here or something. There are stones. There are steps that have been designed. There's a large flat area. Everything is worn. This is an area that has been occupied, or maybe still is, on occasion.
Your old or broken phone can let you down. But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
And on top of it, there is a little cave nearby. And Tolkien informs us that we don't need to be worried about this cave, that it is wholesome and it has a pebbly floor. And it's at the foot of the steps near the stony fort. And so it's nearby this area. It's a place of shelter. It seems like the kind of place that maybe people use on occasion as a natural shelter. But he also has to make sure that we are not traumatized by the previous being in a cave that we dealt with. The last time they went into a cave, they got jumped by a bunch of goblins and they had this whole other adventure. So that's what we're thinking when we get to this point. And Tolkien knows that. He knows that when next time he mentions a cave, we're going to go, uh-oh, are there goblins in it? But not this one. It's a small, wholesome cave with a pebbly floor. And all of these pieces work together as we learn more about this location. What kind of animals live in caves? But before we get to that, we get this announcement from Gandalf. "I always meant to see you all safe, if possible, over the mountains," said the wizard. "And now, by good management and good luck, I have done it." Notice the note here about good luck. We've been talking about how things seem strangely lucky and coincidental. "Indeed, we are now a good deal further east than I ever meant to come with you. For after all, this is not my adventure. I may look in on it again before it is all over, but in the meantime, I have some other pressing business to attend to." Now, he doesn't tell us what the business is right here, and this may come as a shock. I think that this is actually added in here in a sort of surprise sort of way to the reader, but to also let us know that, you know what, he's going to go off. Eventually, Gandalf won't be there to protect everybody or get them out of situations. And that ratchets up the tension, but it also ratchets up the tension for the party. The dwarves groan and they're distressed, and Bilbo weeps. He actually cries over this. "I'm not going to disappear this very instant," he said. "I can give you a day or two more. Probably I can help you out of your present plight, and I need a little help myself." And he notes that they don't have food or ponies or baggage, and so they're going to have to find somewhere that can help them at least get through the next few days, but hopefully supply them for the journey ahead, for both of them, because they're dividing up and going different places. And then we get this detail. Very few people live in these parts, unless they have come here since I was last down this way, which is some years ago. But there is somebody that I know of who lives not far away. Now notice, he's already basically told us that this is the only option that he's aware of. And then he fills in some of the details. He made the steps on the Great Rock. Okay, so this is the person who's been coming to the very location that they landed at. The Kerok, I believe he calls it. He does not come here often, and certainly not in the daytime. Okay, odd. And it's no good waiting for him. In fact, it would be very dangerous. Dangerous because at night things are dangerous, or dangerous because waiting for him specifically is dangerous? He does not note. We must go and find him, and if all goes well at our meeting, I think I shall be off and wish you, like the eagles, farewell wherever you fare. And of course they beg him not to leave and try to change his mind, and of course that doesn't work. And they even try to bribe him, which makes sense. I mean, dwarves love their gold and all of that. And he says, well, no, that's not, we don't need to do that, basically. But by the way, I think I have already earned some of the gold from what I've done so far. When you have got it. So cool. Got it, Gandalf. So the story continues and we get this moment. And these, I love these little moments that detail the nature of what it would actually be like to be in this situation. At the beginning of this section, we learned that Bilbo was craving a bath and brushing his teeth. And so they actually get to bathe in the river, which is shallow and clear and stony at the ford. It seems like a very nice river. I would imagine it's pretty cold. This water is probably coming down from the mountains. And it's pretty cold even in the summer. But it's something that they haven't been able to do in a long time. They dry themselves in the sun. That probably feels good. Their bodies are sore and they're hungry. So at least they have this comfort out in the wild. And then they decide to move on. They cross the ford and it says here, carrying the hobbit. This is not the first time they've had to carry Bilbo. This keeps happening over and over and over again. But notice that we are still about halfway through the book. So the beginning half of the book, the dwarves and Gandalf do a lot of carrying, whether physically, literally carrying, or filling in for Bilbo in moments of Bilbo's need. And yet, that's about to flip, because as we get further into the story, Bilbo will end up carrying the party more and more. And in fact, it's interesting that this is noted here, because we just learned that Gandalf is about to leave. And after Gandalf is gone is when Bilbo starts to step up even more to help carry the party. Gandalf's leaving enables Bilbo to become the person that he is becoming. So then we get this conversation about the Kerok. Bilbo asks, why is it called the Kerok? Gandalf says he called it the Kerok because Kerok is his word for it. He calls things like that Keroks, and this one is the Kerok because it's the only one near his home and he knows it well. Bilbo responds, who calls it? Who knows it? And then Gandalf continues the conversation, but we're going to get back to that in a moment. So what does Kerok actually mean? Well, get this. The name Kerok appears to be a compound of Old English car, C-A-R-R, and Welsh carrig, C-A-R-R-E-G. Both meaning rock or stone. An alternative derivation from Old Norse suggests car means wetland or river. Thus, Kerok would mean river rock. Additionally, the Cumbrian word Carrick, C-A-R-R-E-C, also means rock. So, according to three or four different languages, this means a rock that is near the water, which is exactly what it is. This is a large rock right beside a stream. And this word Kerok didn't exist until Tolkien took the words from these other languages and kind of mushed them together in a way that created a new word, which is exactly what we do with language. Where do new words come from? They come from combinations or reworkings of previous uses or sounds in our own languages. So that's kind of amazing. So the conversation continues. The somebody I spoke of, a very great person. Notice Gandalf uses the word great. He doesn't use good. He uses great. You can be great and not be good. You can also be great and be neutral. You must all be very polite when I introduce you. I shall introduce you slowly, two by two, I think, and you must be careful not to annoy him, or heaven knows what will happen. He can be appalling when he is angry, though he is kind enough if humored. Still, I warn you, he gets angry easily. So he's ratcheting up the tension here a bit more. Okay, we're about to go visit this, whoever this is, and they seem powerful and easily angered, but kind if humored. And he's going to use this method of introducing us two by two, is probably what they're thinking. Now, the dwarves will have recognized that Gandalf used a very similar method when introducing them to Bilbo. They didn't show up all at once at his house. They showed up in small groups that got bigger as it went. Now, that's not exactly the same as two by two, but it functionally works the same by introducing a small amount at a time and not just surprising somebody with a large group. I also think it's interesting if we note the similarities between Bilbo and Bjorn. Now, you might be thinking Bilbo and Bjorn seem like two very different individuals. And of course they are. One is a hobbit and one is a gigantic man that turns into a bear. So yes, but both of them are easily either angered or distressed, and both of them need to be treated politely so that you can get on their good side. Very similar in those regards. And then, of course, the dwarves overhear the conversation and they say things like, well, couldn't you find a more easily tempered person? Which is totally in character for the way people act. You know, it's like, if these are the kinds of things that drive me nuts in the world. If Gandalf had another option, he would have used it. And he already noted that he doesn't have any other options. So these kinds of responses by people are always very confusing to me, because it's like, yeah, you're not happy with the decision, but were you not paying attention? It's not like Gandalf is making you do something bad on purpose. He's going with the best option he has. Of course he is. So why get upset about it? Maybe just take the information and deal with it as best you can. I always find those kinds of conversations odd. It's similar to me, like when you reveal something to somebody and it's a surprise and they go, well, why didn't you tell me? And it's like, well, that's what I'm doing right now. They're like, what they're saying is you should have told me earlier, but does that matter? I'm telling you now. It's not like if I told you earlier, it would have changed the information. And even then you would have said, why didn't you tell me? Those kinds of conversations just don't make any sense to me. Anyway, this situation moves on. He says, yes, it certainly is. No, I could not. And I was explaining very carefully, answered the wizard to their complaints. If you must know more, his name is Bjorn. He is very strong and he is a skin changer. And I think this week we're going to delve in the bonus episode into the history of skin changers and why this is something that would show up in The Hobbit and how there is a history of skin changing in different cultures. So stay tuned for that if you're part of the Patreon, but let's move on. And then we get this response by Bilbo. And I think this is another moment of humor. He says, what, a furrier, a man that calls rabbits conies when he doesn't turn their skin into squirrels, says Bilbo. And this got me wondering, a furrier, what is a furrier? How is that any different or the same as like a taxidermist, right? And it turns out that these are different things. A furrier designs, creates, repairs, and sells for garments. Their work involves garment design, alteration, cleaning, and maintenance to keep furs in good condition. So they are actual furriers. They handle furs as a type of clothing. Furriers often have knowledge of geometry and adapt to the natural characteristics of fur. A taxidermist preserves an animal's body for display or study, creating a lifelike representation. So they're not the same thing. But in my mind, I was like, maybe they are. I don't understand what this is. And again, it just goes to show that, like, previously I hadn't taken the time to actually look that up and see what it is. But there you go. I learned something, and hopefully you learned something as well. So Gandalf responds, "Good gracious heavens, no, 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 no," and it gets all bold. "Don't be a fool, Mr. Baggins, if you can help it." And of course, he's back to grumpy Gandalf. And he also reminds him, "Don't even talk about skinning animals or turning them into clothing or carpet or rugs or anything like that. You do not want to do this." And then he gives us a definition of what is a skin changer. He changes his skin. Sometimes he's a huge black bear, or sometimes he's a great strong black-haired man with huge arms and a great beard. In both cases, he kind of looks bear-like, but in one, he's actually a bear, right? Some say that he is a bear descended from the great and ancient bears of the mountains that lived there before the giants came. So that's one option. But then Gandalf believes that there's another option that is more accurate. Others say that he is a man descended from the first men who lived before Smaug or the other dragons came into this part of the world, and before the goblins came into the hills out of the north. I cannot say, though I fancy the last is the true tale. He is not the sort of person to ask questions of. And knowing the history of the way this stuff works, the description here about the first men, to me, also feels more realistic. But there is some curiosity about how do skin changers become skin changers? And is this just a part of their natural biology, or is this magic? How does this work? And people have wondered about that for a very long time, but the information is actually pretty slim. So what do you think? Where do you think skin changers came from? All right, so we'll be digging into more skin changer history and all of that stuff in the bonus episode this week on the Patreon, patreon.com/LordOfTheRings, or L-O-T-R, Lorecast is where to get. There's a link in the description. You guys know how all this stuff works. And we have to welcome our newest members. Welcome to Caleb W., Jeff E., Sue T., and Finn S. Thank you so much for your support and for everybody's continued support. All 202 of our continuing paying patrons, thank you so much for all of that. And of course, if you are new and are interested in looking at what's going on, you can check everything out. You get ad-free episodes. You can get bonus episodes every week. You can get t-shirts and all sorts of fun stuff. So go check that out on the Patreon. Also, we have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can do it backwards. All right, here we go. Tour Son of Hoor, Tom's the Bombadil, TJT, The Silly Marillion, Rosie Rose, Rivqua, Richard J, Nick K, Mason Weathertop, Lori B, Capenna, Katie S, Jezzer, Gemma D, Jameson, Juan is my hero, Ginger Fury, Gimli a Break, Gerald CFC, almost messed that one up, George B, Fulcrum, Divine Madman, David M, David S, Daniel Nightweaver, Cutter Metalworks, Calicat, Brandy D, Bo, Barney D, Azzle Razzle, Outlay Morton, Apollo, and AK Music Lover. It is harder to do it backwards, and it feels kind of wrong in some sort of weird way. I guess I've been doing it so long in one direction that it's hard to switch it up. So thank you, everybody, for your continued support. And if you would like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We don't have any new ones this week, but if you do leave one and you're in the US where I can see it, I will read it out. And if you do live in other countries or wherever, it's still very helpful for your region of the world. So I appreciate it, even if I can't see it currently. And you can also rate the show on Spotify or wherever else you listen to. And I'm so glad that you are here and keep joining me for this show and keep it going, because this is the highlight of my week. And I love being able to have an excuse to dive even deeper into all of the things that I love. So thanks for being here. I hope you have a wonderful week. The world is a crazy place. And I think we need to hold on to the things that we love and, you know, the communities that we appreciate, and kind of we can get through it together, hopefully. So there you go. Thanks for being here. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.